JD, let me just start with you, but I want you both to feel free to jump in and answer any question I'm addressing here. Just because I'm sort of addressing Pastor Farag, Amir, you just feel free to comment as well. But you have said more than once, JD, in your weekly online updates, that a Trump presidency means the eschatological or end time clock is moving along even faster than before, that the outline of things to come in the Bible are certainly not on hold. They are escalating, in fact. Why do you feel that to be the case? They're escalating under a Donald Trump.
Chiefly because President Trump's pro-Israel and pro-Christian policies have inflamed, for lack of a better word, the powers of darkness. And the devil knows he hath but a short time, we're told in Revelation 12:12. In Revelation 20:12, Jesus said, "Behold, I come quickly." And the word he uses for quickly is a very interesting one. Yes. In the original language of the Greek New Testament. It's the Greek word tachos, where we get our English word for tachometer, that measurement of revolutions per minute, or RPMs if you prefer, meaning that the time is set and things will be revved up at the time of the end when Jesus comes. And certainly things are revving up. Mm-hmm. And what's happening now, what we're witnessing now, especially with Trump being so pro-Israel, we are seeing now the powers of darkness rising up, unleashed, if you will. And it's the likes of which I believe we've never seen before, nor will we ever see this side of the rapture.
Okay. But JD, you also said, this is a quote, "We are in a very dangerous place now as a nation and the world in general." Clarify what you mean there.
So the main reason I believe that we are in a very dangerous place as a nation is because the anti-Israel, anti-Christian left will not sit idly by, which is what we're now seeing vis-a-vis the likes of one Barack Hussein Obama, mm-hmm. who many believe is setting up, even as we speak, a shadow government to destroy President Trump. As for the world in general, specifically as it relates to Israel, Jesus provides us with a somber warning concerning the elect at the time of the seven-year tribulation, the great tribulation. He says in Matthew 24, verses 21 and 22, "For then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. And except," very interesting, "except those days should be shortened, there should be no flesh be saved, but for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened." Here's the bottom line. I'm personally of the belief that the world now, especially with a Trump presidency, is one click of the mouse away from all hell breaking loose, namely the Great Tribulation.
Amir Sarfati, why don't you weigh in on this as well?
I believe that there is absolutely no doubt that we are on the brinks of a very, very major war in the Middle East. And in America, I must say, the lawlessness is going to increase. And Europe, as we all can see, is in shambles. And as a result of the uncontrolled wave of immigration that brought up crime into unbelievable numbers, in the streets of France, in the streets of the Netherlands, in Sweden. By the way, Sweden, President Trump, I think, did touch a very important point of a very good example of how the illegal immigration is bringing down society. There is no doubt that the world right now is either busy in looking for alternatives for Trump or ridiculing him, but the fact that he's there is actually causing the world even to go faster, as Pastor JD said, in the efforts to delegitimize Israel and to bring about other solutions. And it's interesting, this is exactly why Prime Minister Netanyahu is traveling like never before to somehow find friends wherever he can, because we understand that very tough times are ahead of us.
Gentlemen, back on February 15th, now a couple of weeks ago, there was you know, a historic meeting between Benjamin Netanyahu, President Trump, and I say historic only because I'm not sure an Israeli prime minister has ever been received so warmly. Prime Minister Netanyahu was beaming ear to ear. An eight-year nightmare is over for him. And I've talked a lot on this program about the global elite, the one-worlders. Let me start with you, J.D. Farag. Do you think they are going to stand for a strong America under President Trump and for this new climate of cooperation between Israel and America? And then we'll get a response from Amir.
It's so important to understand that these protesters that we see on the streets of America are paid by George Soros, who to me is the personification of evil. This is a man who is demon-possessed and obsessed with everything that is anti-Israel and anti-Christian for the purpose of bringing in, ushering in the New World Order. So to answer your question, and again, this goes back to why I believe it is that things are revving up like never before. Not only will they not stand for this, they will unleash the demons from the pit of hell to do everything to destroy what Trump is doing.
Amir, would you agree with that?
Absolutely. If there is one thing that the global elite understands is that they just lost in two battles. They lost the battle of the U.S. presidency, and they lost the battle of the United Nations Security Council. If you heard the American ambassador to the UN, you understand that the Security Council will not anymore, at no point, condemn Israel unilaterally and will put the blame on Israel as the problem in the Middle East. So right now, the global elite needs to do something else. They need to somehow cause the illegitimacy of the Trump administration, and at the same time, somehow cause division even within the area in the Middle East. Iran and Russia are right now under a lot of pressure. I mean, when I say a lot of pressure, I have never seen anything like that before. There's a lot of stuff I cannot talk right now about from what we know that is being done right now. But just from what has been released, Russia, it's supposed to be right now ceasefire, by the way, and supposed to be almost the end of their battles in Syria. Russia started a huge wave of bombardment in the southern part of the Golan Heights near the city of Daraa. And the Iranians are now arming to the teeth. The Houthis, the second in command of the Yemenite army, was just killed this morning by the Houthi rebels. We're talking about generals in the Houthi army that are basically threatening any U.S. vessel, naval vessel, that will come into Yemenite territory. We are seeing such an increase of instability, an attempt to instigate almost some sort of artificial crisis, because they understand things are not the same as they used to be in the last 8 years, when somebody in the White House used to do all their job and they didn't need to do anything. Right now, they need to work hard on somehow destroying America and destroying Israel. And they need to do much more than just be there and stay quiet. And I see that. Definitely the global elite is behind this whole thing, because who else? I mean, obviously America is not behind it, as the administration is different. We see that it's private billionaires and very, very influential people, both in America and in Western Europe, that are pulling the strings behind this whole thing.
Well, you gave back on October 15th here in the Twin Cities, Amir, you gave a breathtaking message on how Europe is preparing the way for the Antichrist, and we can't go into that now. I think you opened the eyes of some folks. And of course, there's controversy. Where does the Antichrist headquarter out of? I think in the Bible, it's clear that he's going to come out of the old Roman Empire. But I want to pick up on a couple of things both of you have said. And if we have to pick up in the next segment, we can. But Pastor J.D. Farag, you have said this: we are in the last hour of human history. I want to pick up on that. And Amir, you have said 2017 will be a year of disasters and decisions. Let me start with that, Amir. 2017 will be a year of disasters and decisions. Expound on that a little bit.
You know, one of the things that Jesus said, both in Luke 21 and Matthew 24, regarding the characteristics or the signs of the end of the age, it was to do with some nature disasters and some earthquakes and pestilences and all of that. But just the earthquakes and volcanic activity alone, we've been seeing in the last 2 months more activity than almost the first 6 months of 2016 combined. We are looking at earthquakes in pattern and in strength and in frequency that is very unusual. So many eruptions of volcanoes around the world, across the globe, basically, all the way from South America, including two European places, all the way to Indonesia and to some other far remote islands. And we see that the earth is groaning. We see that things are really unstable, even in that area. Look at the floods that we see, in storms that we see, that unprecedented in so many different countries, even what is going on in the West Coast right now in America. And definitely in that area, I believe we're going to see much more happening, but also major decisions, because when we are on the brinks of major wars, then of course comes the tough decisions of who stands with who and when and how. And, for example, a decision about moving an embassy to Jerusalem, yes, is a big decision. For example, a decision about Russia to say, okay, enough is enough. We're no longer friends with Israel. We're actually going to prepare ourselves for an invasion. Mm-hmm. This is a big decision. For Iran, from quiet and in the corner for all those years to somehow flex its muscles and say, okay, we're joining them, this is a big decision. And these decisions, I believe, we will see them in 2017, because time is short and so much is happening. Just think about it. Trump only had 1 month in office. Look what's going on around the world. And it's only going to get worse. And not because he's bad. It's because right now the light has been turned on and you can see all the cockroaches running and all the rats are running all around. You can see that which was done in the darkness cannot be done in the light. They just don't know what to do right now. And they are just running all around trying to find their place. And it is ugly and it is going to manifest itself in a greater way in 2017. This is my estimation, and I think that the first 2 months of 2017 are a great indication for something way, way worse than that.
Interesting combination I have here. I have someone with an Arab heritage, Pastor Frog, and obviously Amir Sarfati from Israel came to, well, I think you were born in Israel, correct, Amir? Your parents came there?
Correct, born in Jerusalem.
Your parents came there in the 40s, did they?
My parents both made Aliyah, made it to Israel. My mom, when she was less than a year old, after her parents survived Auschwitz, and she was born in Cyprus, basically,
yes,
because the British army would not let them in. Good. Father came from Northern Africa, from Tunisia.
Is there anything specifically that leads you to say that we could be in the last hour of human history?
Yes, both foundationally and specifically. First, foundationally, the certainty with which I believe that we are in the last hour, the last moments of world history as we know it, is anchored in what Jesus said in Matthew's Gospel, chapter 24. And Amir referred to this particular prophecy, but also in Luke 21, verses 29 through 32. And I want to read Mark's Gospel, chapter 13, verses 28 through 30, concerning the parable of the fig tree. Jesus said, "Now learn a parable of the fig tree. When her branch is yet tender and putteth forth leaves, ye know that summer is near. So ye in like manner, when ye shall see these things come to pass, know that it is nigh, even at the doors. Verily I say unto you, that this generation shall not pass till these things be done." To me, that started the clock. Then, fast forward to the year 2017. Now think about this. I believe with all of my heart that this is the last hour, because the mathematical odds, just by sheer virtue of the numbers statistically, everything coming to pass simultaneously on the world stage geopolitically is off the charts. I'm no mathematician, but to me, there is an unstoppable momentum of sorts, such that I cannot see a scenario in which the pause button could be pushed. Rather, I see the fast forward button being pushed instead. I liken it to the analogy of something having a shelf life. Bible prophecy has a shelf life, and I'll explain why I say it that way. 10 years ago, we could not have the discussion that we're having today. And I would submit that even 10 years from now, we cannot have the discussion that we're having today. In other words, we are at a tipping point, a breaking point, a boiling point. And there's only so much time that the proverbial iron can be struck when it's hot. In other words, there's an expiration. Could we see, as Amir mentioned, what we're seeing now today with Russia and Iran? Look how fast everything is moving. Can you imagine 10 years from now? I don't think that it's even plausible that we could see what we're seeing today, 10 years from today.
I think it's interesting that nobody is even asking anymore, what is Russia and Iran doing in Syria, right? A mile away from Israel.
Yes.
It's not even a question anymore. The world got used to it.
Yes, got used to it.
Everybody wakes up in the morning. It's easy to attack Trump. It's easy to attack Israel. But nobody's asking the question, how come two sovereign countries are inside another one on the border with another one? I mean, it's almost like, I mean, Ezekiel had no problem, you know, describing that. But the world... It's almost like the world believes Ezekiel because it's so accurate, but they don't want to get the message. It's like, yes, Iran should be here. Yes, Russia should. It's almost like everybody got used to it.
Well,
nobody's even asking that question. You know, nobody asked Russia to go out. Nobody demands Iran to go out. If anything, the only two elements in Syria that are actually fighting each other about, you know, who gets where, when, and what, is Russia and Iran. Russia didn't want Iran to go into Aleppo, lest Iran will declare a victory that is not hers. The point is, the world got used to it. And just as J.D. just said, we could have not talked about this 10 years ago, not even 3 years ago. And yet now, we're talking about it so naturally, as if, yeah, of course, they're there. They should be there, yes. They should be there because the Bible predicted that they will be there.
Right, but Amir, part of the problem is the churches are silent about these issues. And you state, you hear from people in 200 countries are writing you, the remnant from 200 countries writing you, because the remnant has a hunger and a thirst to understand these things. But most of the churches, not all of them, and pastors, don't hear me saying all of you, too many are preaching a very fluffy gospel or a very anti-Israel gospel. Let me read an email I just got. I'm reading just a couple of lines of an email, not going to identify anybody, other than it's from Cindy, and she says, I emailed my pastor to see if he planned to preach on Revelation or the importance of supporting Israel or the issues of the day. He responded no to the book of Revelation because of not having a strong understanding. And to Israel, he said, this is a tougher question since I'm still in process here. And he says, my understanding of Israel has changed over the years of biblical study, and I no longer believe they are in any sense God's people now unless they come to know Jesus as Savior. So my understanding is this is a church that once had truth, no longer has this truth, and if you knew how many emails and communications I get that sound like this, I think my audience would be quite stunned, or maybe not. Maybe they've encountered the same thing. Pastor Farag, you're a pastor. Is this pretty common?
Sadly, it is. This is commonplace. And how ironic that this pastor would, in fact, say what he said about the book of Revelation, and even more specifically Israel, when in Revelation chapters 2 and 3, you have seven letters to seven churches, one of which is lukewarm, and another of which Jesus writes and says to them that those who think they are Jews and are not, and he talks about this church, you have the first church leaving, not losing, leaving their first love, the church of Ephesus. You have Smyrna, Pergamum, you have Thyatira, you have Sardis, you have the church of Philadelphia, and then you have that church of Laodicea, where Jesus is actually on the outside knocking to get in. I know we use that verse in evangelizing. Behold, Jesus stands at the door and knocks. But if you really think about it, he's knocking on the door of a church. And I believe he is knocking on the door of that church, of that pastor, who is saying that, wanting to come back in and sup with them and them with him. And that, to me, is sadly ironic.
Amir, you have a burden to teach people about an event that is imminent. The Bible says it could happen today, and that would be the rapture. Again, many churches either haven't been prepared to teach on this, don't want to teach on it, consider it divisive, whatever. God has obviously given you a burden to teach on this. What kind of response are you getting?
Well, I get all sorts of responses. I mean, and some of them quite shocking, because although the word rapture is not there in the scriptures, mm-hmm. because, you know, when you read it in English, you obviously read the English translation of the Greek. And the Greek word is harpazo, and it is there. People still believe that if the word rapture is not there, then there is no rapture. And in fact, it's hard for people to grasp even the thought that they are going to lose gravity and they will be taken up in the air. It sounds too weird for them. It sounds too unrealistic. And what's so sad about this is that they don't have a problem reading the Bible and seeing all the miracles that Jesus did. They don't have a problem seeing how Jesus himself ascended to heaven. They don't have a problem reading about Enoch and about Elijah. But whenever it comes to the blessed hope, mm-hmm. the amazing promise to the church, for them to be taken out of that hour of trial that is about to come, namely, we will be out before it will come, all of that, then that's when it's getting too weird and we can't take that one. You know, it's funny because it seems like they believe the world more than they believe the word. How can you read 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, or how can you read 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 51, 50. Yeah. How can you read all of these things and not see clearly that we will be caught up and we'll meet him in the air and he will take us and we will be with him. So where he is, we will be also. And then from that moment, we will always be with him. These, for me, this is the single most important thing that a Christian should know in these last days, that there is hope. I mean, we just talked about terrible things. We just talked about how the world is going crazy. We just talked about wars and rumors of wars, about pestilences and earthquakes, and we talked about so many things. But for us, these are just small things compared to the great promise that we have to be taken out of here. And how can I be only dealing with the bad things and not deal with the single most important thing for me as a Christian, which is that I'm about to be out of here. Out of here before God is going to judge this unrighteous world. Out of here before the Antichrist will unleash all of his demonic plans. Plus, I think that one of the reasons people don't really deal with the rapture is that their lack of understanding also of the book of Revelation, which causes them to think that, I mean, Christians should stay here throughout the tribulation, and then thus there is no rapture. What's the point of being raptured when you have to go through the tribulation? So when people are not in the Word, yes, and they're too much in the world, then the Word becomes just too weird to them. And I've heard so many different variations of what the rapture is all about. Even someone just told me that he believes that we will be taken up to the air, but not go all the way to heaven, but just usher Jesus' coming in back to earth. In other words, we are the welcoming party or committee for Jesus to come back. I mean, so many unbelievable things. And I think that there is a very, very poor teaching of that particular thing. And so We need to give the hope for the people. I believe that doom and gloom is part of what's coming up. We know that. But there is a great hope, the blessed hope, as Titus chapter 2 says. And so I have no doubt that preaching that hope is causing people excitement and not fear, because fear is not from God, certainly not for us. We are definitely watchmen. We know what's coming up. As Ezekiel 33 says, we have to alert, we have to tell people, but at the same time, we have a great message of hope, a blessed hope, probably the most important thing that a Christian should know in these last days and in this last hour.
Amir, it's like you say, we cannot be silent. Many who will speak up are going to be mocked, they're going to be scorned, but the watchman cannot be silent. But J.D. Farag, it's like you said in one of your messages, there are so many who seem to be longing for the treasures here on earth. They love the world and the things in it, which is a little bit difficult for me to wrap my brain around, but it has to be true. And they have become almost spiritually disabled, as you put it.
I liken it to being physically disabled. And the reason is that for the most part, the Church of Jesus Christ today, especially in America, has their roots too deep in the soil of this world. And that tight grip on this world and the things of this world creates a spiritual disability. One of the things that Bible prophecy does is it loosens our grip on this world. It readies us and steadies us for eternity. And in Matthew 6, while it's in the context of mammon and, you know, property and possessions and so forth, Jesus makes such a profound statement when he says that where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. He doesn't say it the other way around. Where your heart is, there will your treasure be. No, where your treasure is, that's where your heart is going to be. So if I'm laying up for myself treasures here on earth where moth and rust can destroy and thief can break in and steal, then that's a pretty good indication that I don't have my treasure in heaven and I'm not keeping my eyes fixed on him. And one of the things that personally in my own life, both studying and teaching Bible prophecy has done is it has loosened and even removed the grip that I once had many years ago on this world and the things of this world. And Amir mentioned it. It's very interesting in 1 Thessalonians where Paul, in the context of the rapture, says that, you know, this is what's coming to and on this world, and we're not going to be here because we're going to be taken out of this world in the rapture of the church before the seven-year tribulation. And then he says, therefore, encourage one another with these words. It's to be an encouragement.